Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Asian American and Asian Research Institute's final lecture series, online edition. My name is Anthony Wong, program coordinator for the Institute. I'd like to welcome all of you at home for joining us. And we're thankful today to have with us Dr. Soo-Jung Kim, who will be talking about her research, 1.5 generation working class Korean American community college students and the fragile sense of belonging, social belonging. This talk was supposed to be presented at last year's Association for Asian American Studies Conference, but unfortunately that event was canceled due to the pandemic. And so we thought it would be a great opportunity for Dr. Kim to present her research with us at the Institute. Dr. Kim is an interdisciplinary scholar whose research addresses the critical pedagogy of higher education and community colleges for the public good and educating students as critical public intellectuals. Dr. Kim received her PhD from the Department of Educational Policy Studies at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and is presently a Mellon Humanities Alliance Research Fellow at the Future Initiatives at the CUNY Graduate Center, located not far from the Research Institute. Dr. Kim's research and teaching interests are located at the intersection of class, race, citizenship, power, and subjectivity, and how these intersecting conditions affect vulnerable college students' sense of institutional and social belonging. She also focuses on access to post-secondary education, retention, and outcomes, and how these factors impact students' further educational career and life trajectories. Dr. Kim's current book project examines the interrelations among neoliberal community college policies and politics, the globalization of community colleges, and the restructuring of racial and class relationships among diverse student populations. In addition, her work considers the complex mechanisms through which lower middle and working class Korean international students are as and potential transnational adrift and cheap laborers. And so without further ado, please welcome Dr. Kim.
Thank you so much for inviting me to this wonderful, you know, series. And then I'm so glad and then I'm so honored to share my research with you today. So today I share my research on the working class 1.5 Korean American community college students, you know, their present sense of belonging. So this study investigates working class South Korean American students' sense of social belonging and their institutional belonging. And then I'm also examining their strategies to advocate their, you know, advocate for their institutional and social memberships. So I especially focusing on, you know, low income 1.5 generation of South Korean American community college who are enrolled at a, you know, public community college, namely Station Community College in Chicago suburb. So my research identifies these South Korean American community college students as part of the IMF generation. So different from the typical way of, you know, categorizing a generation based on age, this study defines the IMF generation as those who are in a wide spectrum of different ages from children to adults and who have directly and indirectly witnessed and experienced the devastating impact of neoliberal reforms enacted by the International Monetary Fund since the 1997 and 2008 financial crisis in South Korea. So it was revealed that these working class, you know, South Korean community college students' relocation to the United States was directly caused by the 1997 and 2008 financial crisis in South Korea. In paying attention to such political economic impacts on their move to the United States, this study presents how traumatic transnational move, you know, influences this working class South Korean immigrant community college students' sense of their sense of belonging. So toward the research goal, this study addresses two research questions. First, how do working class South Korean immigrant community college students perceive their belonging to the Station Community College, as well as in the United States and in South Korea? Second, what strategies do these working class South Korean American students utilize to advocate their social belonging? So students' sense of belonging is a crucial indicator that reveals how they are governed by new neoliberalisms. In other words, how their subjectivities are shaped. So in this study, subjectivity refers to the students' ways of desiring, thinking, and positioning in complex power apps at the Station Community College and in South Korean and then American societies. So to analyze the mechanisms through which these Korean American students' subjectivities and belongings are enacted, registered, and negotiated, this study utilized the theory of new neoliberal governmentality and cultural citizenship. So I posit community colleges as one of the most crucial state ideological institutions that cultivate particular subjectivities suitable for profit accumulation in neoliberal regimes. So Butcher defines governmentality as an act of an action on the action of individuals taken either singularly or collectively so as to shape, guide, correct, and modify the ways in which they conduct themselves and cult. Foucault also explained that governmentality is constituted by both the governing technology of others and self. So these processes are mutually interconnected and take many forms in society, from the guardians of family and cult, guardians of families to the ethics of care and the management of the soul and cult. In regulating their citizens, researchers have argued that new neoliberal governing technologies are performed through the subject's own decisions, yet such decisions are more likely guided and corrected by new neoliberal states. So in our discussions on public social institutions' role in the subject making of new arrivals in the United States, Ong argued that state agencies such as local churches and community organizations discipline newcomers to follow normative attitudes and form a proper prescribed identity. So in this sense, entitling a person to social membership can be understood as subject making. However, this process is not unilateral, but a mutual process of self-making and being made by power relationship that produced consent through schemes of surveillance, discipline, control, and administration, according to the So, however, although these theories of new neoliberal governmentality unravel the complex interactions between macro and micro level of governing technologies, I would argue that they present a limit in explaining how immigrant students are governed in the transnational sphere. In other words, this study identifies South Korea and the United States as transnational spheres. We are not only a single state, in this case, the South Korea or the US state, enacts upon these students' subject making. But these states' governing practices simultaneously also affected the students' sense of social belonging. Furthermore, the existing theories of neoliberal governmentality narrow the governing technologies to self-management and entrepreneurship. Yet I argue that the US neoliberalism embraces racism and imperialism as part of the critical governing technologies in regulating the transnational minority students. Thus, to tease apart the complex governing technologies enacted upon the immigrant students, this study examines how the issues that promote self-management and self-entrepreneurship intersects with the racial profiling of Asian Americans in administering the modality of decisions, belonging. So for this research, research is based on 14 months ethnographic field research at the Station Community College. And also I undertook critical discourse analysis on, government documents, news articles and so on. So In the case of Station Community College, it's a comprehensive public community college located in an affluent Chicago suburb where the median family household income there in 2013 was over $18,000. So at the time of my research, the Station Community College was one of the public two-year colleges with the largest number of Korean ethnic students in Chicago metropolitan areas. So at the Station Community College during the research period, also Asian American students were the second largest student group, which constitute over 12% of the population. And for this research, I recruited 12, you know, working class 1.5 generation Korean American students. And also as secondary participants, I also recruited Korean international students and 5 second generation Korean American students, 6 other ethnic domestic students, and 3 instructors and 4 administrators. So regarding these students' sense of institutional belonging, this study found that regardless of the diverse student population, administrative and curricular whiteness is deeply embedded in the institutional administration and cultural politics at the Station Community College. I define administrative and curricular whiteness as official and unofficial and visible and hidden dominant and legitimized perspectives, attitudes, and application that devalue and or ignore languages, cultures, histories, and values of the minority and working class students. So the South Korean Korean immigrant students who were part of the second largest ethnic student group at stage at the community college were seriously invisible, not only in the college curricula, but also in the college's administrative and academic support services. The exclusion of Asian American students from the less minority student categories in general reinforced the institutional neglect in addressing these working class immigrant students' needs and struggles. The students also struggle with their academic works, as well as facing bias and alienation related to the impact of the modern minority myths and the racial profiling of Asian Americans as forever foreigners. So even the Korean American instructors, so I interviewed 2 Korean American instructors at SCC. So even these Korean American instructors had biased perspectives of other Korean Americans and viewed them either as high academic performers and mostly from the middle class who did not need much support, or as Korean ethnic groups who are not high academic performers. I found that like white faculty members, I interviewed Asian American faculty members were not aware of the reality that many of the Korean American students were from working class families and struggled with serious financial constraints and academic challenges. So for example, a Korean American instructor who was from a middle-class immigrant family and served as a student club with members who were mostly working class whites, Latins, and African Americans tended to criticize Korean American students at the community college for not being hard workers based on her assumption they were kind of receiving strong support from their middle-class parents. So moreover, because of the serious shortage of academic and career advising staff, these Korean-American students could not obtain comprehensive academic and career advising services. So they just regarded and mentioned meeting academic advisors as time as wasting because the meeting time is limited within 5 minutes. So it was really hard to get the their advising or information that they needed. So So the working class immigrant students excluded, you know, as I mentioned before, from the less modern minority student categories, especially those from working class families, fell into the crack between the administrative, instructive, and scholastic support and concern, while at the same time they encountered similar discriminations, barriers, and struggles as working class and minority students. So under such circumstances, and with their awareness of their, you know, marginalized status at SCC, I observed that 1.5 generation, you know, of working class South Korean immigrant students tried to differentiate themselves from the Korean international students in order to secure their institutional membership as Americans. Some of them, you know, complained that they were often, you know, misidentified as Korean international students who were highly noticed by instructors and other classmates because of their, you know, distinctive English accents, but also for their low writing skills. And Korean international, you know, male students were, you know, particularly marked by other groups of domestic students because of their so-called overly, you know, feminized styles. So they consistently, these, you know, Korean, South Korean, you know, immigrant students, you know, they try to differentiate themselves, especially from, you know, Korean international students. And, but, you know, such Korean, you know, these students, you know, for ethnic othering, I would argue that, you know, it can be understood as defensive othering, you know, that Squall and his, you know, colleague mentioned, you know, by, and then this is kind of considered as, you know, as, you know, their kind of strategy, actively participating in the internet, kind of they tried, they, on the one hand, they internalize, you know, racial oppression, and then, but on the other hand, you know, they kind of trying to secure their institutional membership by quietening out. So, and then regarding social modality of social belonging, you know, when I ask, you know, about their sense of belonging in terms of, you know, either Korea or in the US or somewhere else, you know, mostly students, you know, portray themselves as being suspended in the air or floating on air or and a foreigner, which indicate their, you know, precarious social membership in both, you know, countries. So, in terms of their modality in belonging in the United States, especially these immigrant, you know, college, community college students describe themselves as alien or a Korean. So this study found that, you know, students' narratives about how they viewed themselves indicate two features. First, their lack of, you know, assimilation in the dominant, you know, ideological white culture that they perceive as US culture. So the students who had internalized the dominant white-centered racialized nationalism tended to limit, you know, 미국 사람, you know, American to US-born upper and middle-class whites. So for example, Hannah, you know, portrayed herself as still wandering in the United States. She explained, you know, her wandering led to her status that was culturally and linguistically not adjusted. In this respect, she said that she is not a 1.5 generation, although she moved to the United States when she was a high school senior. Yet, on the other hand, she identified herself as 1.5 generation in terms of not being, you know, repressed by the US culture, but later, you know, accepting the culture. Bum Jin also shared his experience when he visited Korea. Quote, in Korea, you know, people did not look at me as a stranger. It was comfortable for me to even to go to a grocery market. Although I have lived here in the United States for many years, I don't feel I'm a member of this society, end quote. So in their study of 1.5 generation and second generation of Asian American college students, Tru and Lee also found that Asian American undergraduate students exclusively associate Americanization with whiteness and doubt their social membership in the United States. So based on their, you know, internalized white nationalism, the immigrant students highlighted their Koreanness to explain, you know, why they could not be real Americans. So this indicates the hegemony power of white, you know, centered, you know, racialized nationalism that directed these racial minority students blame themselves for not being able to becoming authentic Americans and to assimilate their imagined ideological American cultures. So regarding their sense of you know, belonging to South Korea, you know, these students were reluctant to claim their belonging, you know, in South Korean society because of their envisioned, you know, stigmatized, you know, social identity, as well as having limited financial and social capital. They considered these two factors, you know, prevented them from being recognized as social, valuable social members in South Korea. For example, Dong-hye viewed himself, who does not gain 4-year university degrees, as a code failure in the South Korean context. When I asked, you know, why he did not go back to South Korea with his parents, he replied, quote, "If I lived now in Korea, I would be a failure. If I was in Korea now, I would take a, you know, national college extra entrance exam, sorry, and would go to a 2-year college because of my low test scores. And I'd have to join the military service because I haven't served yet. Then I would waste 2 years without getting any college, you know, education, a license, or a job. There was no choice but to stay in the United States," end quote. So Dong-hye's parents, you know, went back to Korea. You know, they tried to manage their lives in the United States, but they couldn't. So his parents, you know, went back to Korea, and then Dong-hye decided to stay here. And Eun-hye, who had to return to Korea because of a legal issue concerning her family, you know, permanent residency, you know, she portrayed her life in South Korea as, quote, too gloomy, end quote. When she was 14 years old, you know, her family moved to the United States with, you know, religion visas, as her father was a pastor. After graduating from high school, she studied at a community college as a part-time student for 2 years. Yet, you know, afterwards, her family had to move back to South Korea because of the visa issue. And she said, quote, "I heard we, you know, our family would soon get permanent residency. They said it would, you know, only take about 3 months, but it took 3 years. So while I living in Korea, I worked at a trading company, at an ice cream shop, and then at a private English preschool where they taught in English, and felt my life was so dark. Without graduating from a university, living in Korea is so tough. As you know, only if you graduate from university can, you know, we expect something better." So these, you know, end quote. So these, you know, South Korean immigrant students who emigrated to Korea during their middle or high school years did not consider their English nor English culture capital, nor, you know, U.S., you know, American culture capital have little value in Korea if they, you know, they do not have post-secondary education certificate in the U.S. or, you know, from highly ranked universities in South Korea. So to advocate their belonging, so I will discuss about these student strategies. So, you know, in a interview, you know, Changsu and Dong-hye explicitly portrayed the Korean community in Chicago as separate from that of U.S. society. And such a, you know, perception reflects their, you know, notion of being between that is related to their sense of belonging. So, and then they advocated, you know, they said, oh, we are belonging to Korean communities in Chicago here. So such, you know, decontextualization of, you know, so they try to, you know, decontextualize Korean communities from the, you know, U.S. racial and class maps, and also, you know, U.S. society itself on the other hand. Oh, sorry. So they try to decontextualize in the Korean communities from the, you know, U.S. racial and, you know, class maps, and then also U.S. society. So these kind of strategy can be understood as the alienation, as the alienation of Korean immigrants and Korean communities from their imagined United States. However, on the other hand, such a view, you know, can also be understood as their resistance to being identified as a subordinate minority group in the U.S. Regarding Korean immigrants' position on U.S., you know, in the on U.S. racial and class maps, Dong-hee said, quote, "I think immigrant Koreans are not located in such hierarchical, you know, racial and class relationship in the United States because the work that immigrant Koreans are doing is not exactly related to American society," end quote. So he considered the jobs Korean immigrants were engaged in the Korean communities as kind of, you know, disconnected from work in the U.S. society. So interestingly, Chang-soo also mentioned that he did not feel a sense of belonging in the United States or in Korean society, but in the Korean community in Chicago, as I mentioned before. So I interpret that these, you know, transnational students, you know, deterritorization of their ethnic communities reflects the deterritorizing of their identities from a certain state's territory. It can be understood that such, you know, deterritorization problematizes the dominant, you know, tendency that naturalized associating identities and cultures within the boundaries of states, you know, geographical territories. And another strategy is mokkosanism and gakjadoseng. So mokkosanism can be translated as eating and livingism, and gakjadoseng can be translated in English as individually seeking one's own survivor. So as briefly, you know, discussed above, the working class immigrant students mostly had worked from 2 or 3 years before they enrolled in the, you know, station community college to support themselves. It was not feasible, you know, for them to start their post-secondary education right away at, you know, their high school graduation. So for instance, Dong-hee could not, you know, even consider going to a community college because he had, you know, struggled as a high school graduate to make money and with little financial support from his parents. So, you know, but after 3 years, you know, he, you know, registered for classes. And under, you know, such circumstances, these, you know, South Korean working class, you know, community college students understood the value of, you know, their community college education and experiences within the frame of, you know, 먹고사니즘, eating and livingism. So 먹고사니즘, you know, became one of the most popular, you know, words, you know, or, you know, terminology or term in contemporary Korea after the 1997 and 2008 financial crisis. And these students are very, you know, kind of, be familiar with this, the notion of 먹고사니즘, and they often mention this 먹고사니즘. And Hyeon, who seriously struggled with, you know, uncertainty where she could, you know, support herself as an artist. For example, you know, she gave up major in fine arts, and she was kind of administered, you know, got an admission to a kind of prestigious, you know, art institute, but, you know, later she just, you know, dropped out. And then she said, "If you like something, that means that you are willing to take a risk." And then she, you know, concluded that she did not like fine arts because she wasn't sure she was willing to take a, you know, future financial risk. And she said, quote, "Life itself is not beautiful, so it's no use making beautiful pottery by hand. And I now think there's no need to, you know, hierarchically downgrade 먹고사니즘. I now casually say that eating is so precious." So the by-nature struggling students and their parents tended to choose the best strategy to, you know, guarantee their survival on their own, you know, which is reflected in the word, you know, 각자 도생 in Korean. So talking about his father who cut off his communication with himself and his younger sister after going back to South Korea, he remarked, well, it's like, you know, saying bad things about my father, but actually he abandoned us. He, you know, lost his mother by a car accident about 6 months after they arrived in the United States. And similarly, Dong Il-fu's parents, you know, as I mentioned before, ran a small restaurant at a small rural town in South Korea after they went back to South Korea. And he said, quote, I don't feel any obligation to support my parents when, you know, they are very old because there is nothing I'm receiving from them. I don't need to give them anything, end quote. So in this regard, you know, I argue that 각자 도생 is a more radical version of self-responsibility, which is a core neoliberal ethos. And Hee-seok and Dong-il's, you know, relationship with their parents reveal the increasing realities where, you know, sustaining effective and, you know, supportive relationship within a family becomes a critical challenge with the, you know, preeminence in the cultural fear and anxiety in poverty. So overall, I would, you know, discuss that Mokusanism and 각자 도생 are on the one hand the most explicit terms that mirror the vulnerable working class transnational community college students' realities. And on the other hand, you know, 먹고사니즘 and 각자 도생 are the directed strategies, you know, they choose for sustaining their, you know, basic livelihood in the new neoliberalisms. So the findings of my, you know, study indicated that station community colleges functions as a critical state ideological institution that addresses the interests of, you know, profit accumulation regimes while ignoring these Korean, you know, South Korean American students their post-colonial subjectivities and internalized the, you know, racism. You know, these kind of issues were deepened during their years at the community college. So under the conditions, the, you know, flooding transnational students were mourning about their depressive social positions and invisibleness. As Hannah mentioned, that she does not have, quote, no stories, end quote, in the United States, which means that her stories are not recognized in the United States at all. So different from upper and middle class Asian Americans who do not know what they have lost in themselves in the process of continuously being racialized as on assimilable others in the study of Ng and Han's study, I argue that these, you know, precarious South Korean American working class students were suffering from the hollowness in their being as well as poverty. So building on my findings, you know, this study first suggests, you know, further rigorous examination of the socioeconomic conditions both in the United States and in South Korea in the research on Korean Americans. And moreover, it is urgent to employ the counter-neoliberal critical pedagogy of community college education, you know, including revisiting the community college's missions and their official and hidden curriculum in order to liberate and empower community college students, you know, as, you know, democratic, critical democratic citizens. So I didn't have time to discuss about this in a new community college politics. So, yeah. And employment of such, you know, critical pedagogy, which leads diverse groups of students to share, you know, their oppressed conditions and to build solidarity, would enable these, you know, precarious young adults to actively collaborate with other democratic groups to lead social changes in more equal, democratic, just, and humanistic ways. And also, providing Asian American studies courses are essential for these students, especially at the, you know, station community colleges, at the station community college. And also these, you know, courses I expect will guide these immigrant students to build a more concrete and critical understanding of the global, transnational, and nation states mechanisms that sustain and reproduce, you know, their precariousness. Also, throughout the courses can, you know, these students can be empowered to overcome the dominant tendency to associate, you know, identity and cultures to specific, you know, territory entities. And this is my end of presentation, and thank you so much. And then, yeah.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Just to start off, could you explain just a little bit for folks who aren't familiar, what caused the financial crises in 97 as well in 2008 that sort of created sort of this lower income unemployment or employment in the country that forced folks to sort of migrate over here to the United States?
So in 1997, and then, so by the impact of financial crisis in the United States, and then so in 1997, and then there's a, in Asia, there's a financial crisis. So in the case of South Korea, you know, the government don't have, didn't have enough funding to, you know, sustain and then repay their kind of international debt. And then, so the IMF, International Monetary Fund, in a fund in actively engaged in reforming economic structures, business structures in South Korea. So, for example, in major bank or, you know, agriculture, you know, industries or businesses, more than, as I know, you know, more than 80% of transnational corporations started to dominate the, you know, Korean domestic market. And then, so, yeah. So, as a result, you know, the, I don't remember exactly the, you know, unemployment rate. So, but the, it is kind of a strike, not just the lower income families, but also upper middle or middle class, you know, families in South Korea, you know, after the after this, in those financial crisis. And then, so, yeah, so it was kind of really gloomy. So after that, you know, the, especially the, you know, suicide rates, you know, among the, you know, even the, you know, professional career, you know, middle-aged people, you know, there's a high rate of suicide and so on. So, yeah, so after that, so there's a, you know, popular discourse about, you know, mentioning, you know, saying Hell Joseon. So Hell, you know, Joseon is the Joseon dynasty. And then so, there's a, after that, so there's a very strong trend, you know, among Koreans trying to move out from South Korean society, yeah.
And then in terms of 1.5 generation, could you just sort of explain that to folks who might not understand that particular sociological terminology?
Mm-hmm. So 1.5 generation Korean immigrants, 1.5 generation Korean Americans can be, you know, explained as the, you know, immigrants, you know, not just adults, but it can be, you know, children or, you know, youth or young adults, you know, who moved to the, immigrated to the U.S. During their childhood and then teenagers and then even during their adulthood. Yeah. And then so especially, but in the case of, you know, the adults, usually we call as, you know, first generation of, you know, Asian American or Korean Americans. So maybe one generation can be, you know, covered the children's and to, you know, young adults and the youth who moved to the U.S., you know, during their childhood and then were teenagers, when they were teenagers.
I see. Within your study, for the participants that you interviewed, what particular average age did they actually move here to the United States then?
So mostly they moved to the United States when they were middle schoolers or high school students. So, two cases were moved to the U.S. when they were high school seniors. Yeah,
I see. And then, in terms of their education back in South Korea before they moved here, how much English language education did they have, or not at all? So when they came here, they had to enter into ESL classes in order to catch up on their English, in order to.
Yeah, and then surprisingly, in Chicago. So in Chicago, there's a, you know, very strong Korean community there. Is there, but the. But in the case of one Hannah, she went to school and then at the high school, there was no ESL program. And then so she said it was really kind of, she said that she was kind of just inside of kind of, you know, glass walls or some glass cubic in her classrooms, because she couldn't speak English at all. And then, you know, she was not, you know, familiar with the, you know, school culture. So it was really hard for her to get out of her, you know, glass box. And then, so, yeah. And then also some students have, you know, had at their school, they had ESL classes. And then, but, you know, in the interview, I found that these working class students usually, maybe after one semester, even during their high school years, they were working too. So they were kind of in between. So they took classes, and then if there is kind of, you know, recess, or, you know, if they didn't have any classes, they went to cafe or somewhere to work, and then came back to school to, you know, take, you know, other classes, something is like that. So it was, yeah, I would say it was so tough. And then also these students tend to, you know, transfer from a community college to another community college based on their workplaces, because mostly they are working as a, you know, full-time or part-time, but the, you know, contract jobs. So if they move to another workplaces, they, you know, had to transfer to another community college, other community colleges. And then sometimes, you know, credit, you know, they have some issue related to credits.
Mm-hmm. What were the main majors that they studied when they went to station?
Majors?
Yeah.
Thank you for the question. So most of them are kind of wanted to get into nursing programs. Except for just one student. Mm. And then, so it was my surprising. And then, so I just asked, as I mentioned, that they didn't have any, you know, advising from the, you know, community college, you know, advising, you know, staff or, you know, careers and career center staff, that's like that. So mostly they depends on the, you know, their social networks within the community college in Chicago, right? So the small Korean American community within larger, you know, Korean American community in Chicago metropolitan. So they're really kind of, they have kind of very limited social networks. And then, so I think, but surprisingly, they said most of them, they mentioned that they wanted to major in nursing, and then because, you know, they could get job. So, but I found that, I didn't mention about the alumni who finished their associate degree at the community college, but I could meet several, you know, alumni who kind of was in the track of nursing. And then they tried to get into, you know, nursing program at a 4-year university, a public university, right? Because of tuition and so on. And then, but they similar said it was really hard to get into nursing programs. So, yeah, so it is kind of risky. So they mentioned that kind of, oh, I'm taking a risk, you know, I'm not so sure whether I can get in the nursing program or not. Yeah.
I see. Did this also correspond to gender, male, female? They both wanted to get into the nursing program, sort of medical field?
Yeah. So the both female and male students, they are kind of wanted to major nurse. And then the student who majored, you know, fine arts, you know, who she got an admission at a prestigious art institute in Chicago. And then, so she really likes the, you know, arts. But she kind of, because of their, you know, parents struggling in terms of financial, you know, area, and then also the church committee member also, you know, why are you majoring fine arts? You know, how, you know, can it that bring you kind of, you know, meal to your table? You know, why? It's like that. So there's a kind of some pressure about, you know, from other, you know, Korean, you know, immigrants, you know, older Korean immigrants. And then, so she was really struggling. And then, so yeah, but finally she decided to, you know, major nurse. And then, but you know, mostly they are kind of working as full-time. So, it was really hard for me to see them on campus because they kind of just taking classes and then went to work as like that. And then so it took much, much longer than they expected. So some students over 5 or 7 years studying at the community college. Yeah.
I see. For those who didn't get into sort of the nursing programs, do you happen to know what sort of employment they got into presently? Have you done follow-ups with these particular subjects?
So mostly they are working, some of them, their jobs, right? So some of them, they're working at a bank. And then also they're mostly they're working as a waitress. And then also, a male student's working on roofing. And so mostly they are kind of, or at a grocery market, they're kind of stepping the, the items, or, managing, ordering the certain items, something else like that at a grocery market.
Mm-hmm. I see. But this is all still within their own Korean community. Did they branch out outside, or they're still within the same community boxed in?
Just within the area, I would say. So they just kind of stayed there, work was in within the, the community. So they don't commute, far away. And then,
I see.
Have you considered doing the same study in within the CUNY system?
I would like to, because I started to work at the Career Center from 2018. And then I didn't mention in my presentation, but the policy, the state policy and the city policy about the related community college, in the case of Chicago, it's really clear that Chicago mayor really emphasizing manufacturing and some other STEM areas to fill the lack of employees, right? So then the community college systems within Chicago City, it was kind of reconfigured. So certain community colleges focusing on certain areas, and then the other community colleges focusing on sort of hospitality or something else like that. And then, so in the case of New York, now I'm doing field work at a community college. And then, so based on my field work, it seems like the community college students, I just met 3 Korean American community college students, but here, and then also I interact with other ethnic, minority students at a community college. And it seems like they have kind of agency actually. And then also critical perspectives about, the racism, and then, all those, some, racism, and then the, the irony of the capitalism, and then, their status of being exploited at their workplaces, it's like that. But in this case of, 1.5 generation Korean American students, as I mentioned, the IMF generation, they're really kind of have kind of a collective, anxiety or horror about the, after the Asian financial crisis. So they really kind of, so they were not so interested in kind of engaging some kind of activities on campus. So at the community college, Latin students were very active to share their, cultural events and so on. But when I observed them, the Korean international students were just passed, not international, Korean American students just passed. And then they mentioned that, they're, too loud, and then it's better just keep being silent. It's like that. So I really want to compare, the, Chicago context and the New York context.
For the students here, are there many who are part of the IMF generation that you see in New York City?
I'm not so sure. So I can't tell now because I didn't look into, but sure.
Well, something to look into as you further study.
I definitely want to look into that.
For New York City itself, where have you seen sort of has a larger number so far of Korean American population that you've seen so far?
And then also during the COVID, I found this very one interesting phenomenon is that within the Korean, you know, Korean town, in the K-town in Manhattan, so there are many Korean, you know, Korean young adults working there, right? Including maybe Korean international students who are enrolled in, you know, colleges, university, or, you know, like linguistic institutions, or, you know, Korean Americans. And then just through my personal networks, I found that those Korean young adults, including some, you know, 1.5 generation Korean Americans and their parents, you know, went back to South Korea during the pandemic. So yeah, it was very interesting phenomenon. And then, yeah, I want to look into.
You mentioned in your study how some folks, they, in order to make it back in South Korea, they would have to sort of get a degree here or go to a higher education like institution back in South Korea itself. So would a associate's degree over here suffice and then going back, or that still wouldn't be enough to sort of have an okay, decent, high paying job in South Korea?
So it's very interesting. So I read Alex Lee, he published his autobiographic, you know, article about his, you know, kind of, you know, higher, you know, social position in South Korea, because he has a PhD and then also from middle class, and his parents kind of, you know, his father had a kind of professional job even in the U.S. after they moved to the U.S. I'm not so sure. But anyway, his father worked at a kind of prestigious, you know, big company. And then so he, in his article, he mentioned that he's kind of recognized as an English speaker. And then, you know, U.S. who has, you know, American cultural capital as like that. But in this case of, you know, working class Korean American students, I think their, you know, financial status and then their parents' jobs, and then also their associate degree do not have a high, you know, market value or, you know, high value in, you know, deciding their social positions in South Korea.
How exactly did the IMF affected the student to come here in the United States? How exactly does the IMF affect the student coming to the United States?
So you mean why they moved to the United States?
I think he means what particular policies that the IMF implement, right?
Yeah.
That affected South Korea's economy, that forced sort of these families to move here.
Okay. So then first, as I mentioned before, you know, the devastated, you know, economic situation, and then so all of these students' parents lost their jobs. So even some of the students, you know, in the case of his father worked at a big company, Dell, and then he lost job during the financial crisis. And then so they really, so most of them, they lost their jobs. So they have kind of relatives or family members in Chicago, you know, Chicago area. So they decided to, you know, move to to Chicago to make ends meet. So to find some job, they expected to find some jobs to make ends meet in Chicago as like. So that's why they moved. And then also, I think some of them mentioned that about the, you know, I would say the cultural politics of social membership or social belonging in South Korea and during the neoliberalism is really, it can be one great factors. So these students kind of young, so they were not, you know, explicitly articulate why, you know, they, you know, families decided to move to the United States. But in my other research on Korean international students, working class Korean international students at the community college, at the same community college, they are mostly kind of high school graduate who failed to get, admission from, you know, higher education institutions, or who went to, you know, third tier of university in South Korea. And then so they mentioned that if you are not the first, or if you are not, you know, have kind of a degree from a very highly ranked in, you know, universities, you are kind of just social, you know, surplus and then social waste, it's like that. So they mentioned that they feel like they're standing on the cliff, at the end of the cliff, and then there's no future and then no hope. And then they're kind of surplus decaying in their rooms or something else like this. It's really kind of gloomy. And then so I think, and then also I shared in my presentation, these students really think, you know, there is no future because especially one of the reasons is the education credential. So without, you know, degree from a four-year universities in the U.S. or high-ranked, you know, higher-ranked universities, you know, they cannot, it can be very hard for them to get a job. So, and then one student mentioned that he read a news article, maybe 60%, over 60% or percent of taxi drivers has college degrees, as like this. So,
did the subject matter of mental health ever come up during your study? Sort of like this building pressure amongst all these students, you know, having to study, not knowing the language, and then having to go to work, you know, during their breaks after school, and then taking 5 to 7 years to graduate just to get an associate's degree. Did the subject matter of like having a group of friends to discuss with, is there someone they could talk to in order to let out this sort of like huge pressure that's on top of them?
So it's very interesting. So on campus, usually I stayed there 4 or 5 days on campus. So it's kind of, there's just one cafeteria, you know, major big cafeteria where students usually stayed, you know, during their recess or between classes, it's like that. But in my case, based on my observation, it was really hard for these Korean American students as well as Korean international students get along together on campus, actually. So just, you know, two male students who are working at the same bank, they often, stayed at the cafeteria and then talking and then studying something else like that. But most of the students, they just kind of, they didn't stay on campus. And then, so when I checked, you know, because it is small community college, so they could know each other, but actually they didn't want to interact, you know, with other Korean Americans on campus. But I found that on their community at church, especially church, you know, they have kind of social networks with other Korean Americans.
I see. But do they discuss sort of the pressures that they're facing at all?
So in the case of female students, you know, female interviewees, they mentioned, you know, they struggled with kind of depression. And then, but in the case of male students, I think they have still kind of concern about masculinity, it's like this. So they really trying to, you know, to be strong or, you know, and then they didn't, no male interviewee mentioned about their mental health issues.
Do you happen to know if the Korean American Chicago community has sort of counselors, mental health sort of counselors in order to for people to speak with?
Yeah, I bet. So I bet there are so many Korean American, you know, community organizations, and then they can reach out. This is the beyond my research scope, but and then not in this research, but in my another research, you know, many researchers mentioned about the, you know, the stigmatized, you know, perception on mental health issues in South Korean community. So so in the case of one female student, she really has kind of serious, you know, I think depression issues. And then, but she didn't seek any help on campus. And then I didn't hear about his seeking some kind of, you know, counseling within Korean community. And then she was the only daughter in her family. And then so, yeah. And then mostly they kind of, Korean churches, I think Korean churches are kind of playing significant role in their kind of, in terms of having, you know, some support, you know, emotional or social supports. Yeah. And then also maybe, yeah.
Is that, would you say so far in your research for New York City, the same thing, church plays a major role for the 1.5 generation here as well, so far in your research, if you looked into it?
Yeah, so maybe I cannot tell a lot about 1.5 generation Korean Americans in New York City, but this is not based on my research, but this is my just observation as one of the member, sure, committee member.
Yeah.
And then, so it seems like the case of New York is much more active, you know, in terms of, you know, empowering Korean Americans, even though they're kind of conservative, you know, organizations and so on, but still they are, more, you know, active, you know, more active, you know, community organizations, activities, kind of, you know, recognizing cultures, Korean, you know, Korean American cultures and so on. And then, so maybe I think the city dynamics might be a little bit different between Chicago and New York. Yeah, I need to ask you to
something to further research as you study New York City's community college students. Do you have any updates you would like to provide regarding your current book project that you would like to discuss?
So can I just briefly share my current project at the Graduate Center? So now I'm working on the critical pedagogy of humanities for community college students, because in government, you know, community college policies is community college students are kind of, you know, identified as kind of workforces rather than as, you know, democratic citizens. And then so now even I observe the humanities, you know, and then humanistic social sciences curriculums and teachings are very, you know, vibrant here in the New York City, but the overall across the, you know, states in dominant community college policies, you know, humanities are really kind of, you know, valued based on market value, and then, you know, producing workforces for, you know, kind of in the global economic era, or so called. And then so now I'm researching on the significance of humanities and humanistic social sciences for community college students to educate them, you know, recognize them and educating them as critical democratic citizens. So now we are working on the book project, publishing edited books. So the authors are mostly adjuncts, you know, doctoral students and the community college faculty members and some administrators. Kind of we are sharing, you know, our pedagogy and then how we try to implement, you know, critical pedagogy of humanities in our classes. And yeah. And then also the CUNY Humanities Alliance program is working, you know, now we are entering the second phase of the program. And then so in the second phase, you know, we are really focusing on open pedagogy and then as a, you know, core of critical pedagogy. And then so, yeah, so our kind of, you know, experience will be shared maybe. Yeah.
Great. So with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Kim for presenting on her research, and we look forward to her current book research when it's done. It's being edited right now, right? So mm-hmm. It should be out soon, hopefully. And we thank you very much for joining us, and yeah, we look forward to future talks with you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.